The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome into Students of the Game. My name is Alex Bauman, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Nathan Glidewell. No AAA today, so we're going to hop right into college football. What happened this past weekend? Alabama and Tennessee, obviously. Two teams that absolutely hate each other, and after the game, you could definitely tell that. Auburn-Ole Miss game happened, and once again, Auburn's offense, Lord have mercy, you freeze, what are we doing? That was a difficult game to watch. The Arkansas-Mississippi State game was a whole other difficult game to watch. Nathan's got a few things to say about that when we get to that later in the video, because that was something. You had Penn State-Ohio State, that was a huge game, and did not live up to expectations, in my opinion, for either team. And we're going to talk about Utah-USC and whatever Lincoln Riley's doing in Southern California, because it is not right. Dude is just selling. I don't know what's going on. But let's start off with Alabama-Tennessee. Tennessee comes down to Bryant-Denny Stadium. Alabama starts out pretty rough, down 20-7 at halftime. Could have been a lot worse. Nathan, you could probably agree with that, with how Tennessee kept just driving down the field, especially in that first quarter. And the defense, they bent, but they did not break. So that was a good thing. But it once again was down 20-7 because the offense was just awful in that first half. Outside of the Arkansas game in the first half, Alabama has been awful all season long. I don't know what it is. It feels like the first 15 plays, the scripted plays from Tommy Reese, are just not working out for Jalen Milroe. The offensive line, the receivers, things aren't clicking. But when we get into halftime, Reese and Milroe, Saban, the coaching staff, players make all these adjustments. Alabama comes out and plays a lot better, and they did this game. They came out and scored, 27 unanswered points, Nathan?
Yeah, 27 unanswered.
Held Tennessee to 0 points, the defense did. So, once again, the second half for Alabama has been great all year long, outside of the Arkansas game. That was like the outlier there, even though they did win it. Let's start off with the offense, how that went. QB Jalen Milroe, 14-21, 220 yards, two touchdowns, had an interception, which really was, it wasn't like he forced it in somewhere. It was just a good play from the defense. The player batted it down, and there was somebody in the field of play that was able to catch the ricochet. So that really, at the grand scheme of things, wasn't a terrible decision because he was throwing Jermaine Burton, and I thought he had a chance at it. Milroe did also have a fumble loss, but once again, I personally don't think that was on Jalen Milroe. It was the fact that, you know, Caden Proctor decided he didn't feel like blocking during that play and let Jalen Milroe absolutely get plowed. So, once again, not Jalen Milroe's fault, but you know, he's got to be able to hold that football a little bit better. Running back Jace McClellan, pretty good game, 115 rushing yards and a touchdown. Was in that second half, that first drive, that first play of that first drive, had that huge run that really set up the next play, which is a touchdown pass to Isaiah Bond. That kind of propelled Alabama to continue their stretch of 27 unanswered points. So that was great for Jace McClellan to get that offense going, especially with him being the veteran there. Rodo Williams added 20 rushing yards as well. The receivers, Isaiah Bond had 77 receiving yards and a touchdown. Jermaine Burton had 62 and a touchdown. Those two guys continue to be the go-to targets for Jalen Milroe, and I think they've done a great job all season. I'm really surprised the way Jermaine Burton's been playing. I personally had never been a huge fan of Jermaine Burton, especially what happened last year in the Tennessee game where he punched that person that was rushing the field. I hope he's gotten better from that point, but he's been playing. There was a catch in the game where there was like three defenders around him, and he did some acrobatic catch and managed to hold on to it. I'm not really sure how, but dude's been very good. I'm very impressed with him. And Isaiah Bond's been the deep threat. Everybody from Alabama has been expecting him to be. Kind of disappointed in a guy like Malik Benson. Hasn't been as good when it comes to stuff like that. But, Jalen Milroe hasn't been the greatest passer in the world, but that's okay. And then we flip over to the defense. Three sacks, eight TFLs. Had that fumble forced by Chris Braswell and returned for a touchdown by Jahad Campbell. That was I think that was probably the game changing play outside of that fourth and one stop at the 49 yard line, Nathan. That's where it was.
Yeah, around that.
Yes. I mean, I think those were probably the two biggest plays for this team in that second half in the entire game. So once again, kudos to that defense. They came in the second half, like I mentioned earlier, and absolutely shut down Tennessee's offense. Deontay Lawson, 12 tackles, six solo. Jahad Campbell at linebacker with Trezvon Marshall out, came in and got that start there. He had 10 tackles, six solo, a tackle for loss, and then that fumble recovery for a touchdown. Dallas Turner, Chris Braswell have been really improving all season, getting pressure on that quarterback. Turner, a sack and two TFLs. Then Braswell, two sacks and two TFLs, and that fumble forced. I think this defense is one of the best in the country. Nathan, you said they're maybe the best in the country at this point, the way they've been playing. I think for me, they just got to get under control in that first half, play a little bit better. I know they, like we said, they bent, but they didn't break, but they let Tennessee march down the field on them multiple times in that first quarter. And they just got to get better at that. Cause if you, with LSU coming up in 2 weeks, if you let LSU get out to that hot start and your offense can't do anything against their terrible defense, Jaden Daniels is going to make you look silly the entire game because he's so good at quarterback. Looking at Tennessee, Joe Milton doing the Crimson Crane when he scored his first touchdown to squirrel right, and then coming out at halftime doing the bow and arrow to all the Alabama players, and then proceeding to crap his pants in the second half, I thought was kind of funny, but I don't know what he's thinking. Every time somebody does the Crimson Crane, it never really ends well for them. I just remember during the Alabama Auburn Iron Bowl we went to, Nathan, what was that, 2 years ago? And all the Auburn players were in the people in the stands were in the Crimson Crane and everything. Mm-hmm. And then they sell at the end of the game. So just be a lookout for that if you try to do that if you're an opposing team. I think for Tennessee, Squirrel Wright played really good, especially in that first half. He finished with 10 receptions, 111 yards, and a touchdown. But Alabama's defense really did hold him in check in that second half. From Tennessee, their offense has really been relying on that rushing attack. And Joe Milton, with 59 yards, was their leading rusher. That's kind of disappointing for Tennessee, but that's something to look for Alabama, how good they were doing containing that rushing attack. And even though Joe Milton did get some few rushes here and there, they did do a good job of holding him in check for the most part. And once again, that's a good thing going into LSU in a couple of weeks when you're playing one of the best running quarterbacks and rushing offenses in the country. Nathan, Tennessee fans and Josh Heupel wanted to blame the refs this game. The penalties, Alabama had 1 for 5 yards. Tennessee had 8 for 55. And you talk about last year in that PI call that the ref waited about 3 decades to throw the flag on. Do you think Tennessee has a reasonable argument here saying the refs gave Alabama this game?
No. You didn't score in the second half. Last time I checked, the ref can't play offense for you. They can't play defense for you. Look, trying to blame officials for losses is pretty dumb, in my opinion, because if you look at the number of calls officials make, I mean, maybe 10 at max, and I get that one single call can influence the game, but there are so many opportunities in the game that your team has to make a play, and they just didn't in this game. I waited about 365 days. I sat on this because last year was the first time I've ever really experienced Alabama lose to Tennessee. I didn't even think that was a possibility before, but I learned, and I let this hatred for Tennessee build and build and build. And we got to Saturday, and right before the game starts, I'm just like having memories of everything I went through last year and how awful it was. And then we come in the first half, and it's like I was like having PTSD because it was happening all over again. The offensive game plan going in, I didn't really like it. Tommy Reason really put Jalen Milroe in a situation to get comfortable in. Felt like we were trying to force stuff that didn't need to be forced early, especially with that deep ball. I didn't feel like we established the running game well in the first half. And that was something that obviously changed throughout time. But in the first half, I just did not like what we were doing on the offensive end. You talk about the first defensive series where we gave that touchdown to Squirrel, right? I mean, really, if you look at the whole series as a whole, having Chris Braswell and Ed Dresser cover one of the fastest receivers on the field, that's just a mismatch. I don't know if it was Kevin Steele or if it was just a personnel issue, but obviously that led to the touchdown. But outside of that, Alabama's offense donated Tennessee the ball like two different times in the red zone or something like that. And Tennessee comes out and they don't move the ball. They settle for three both times. You got to look at Alabama's defense and give them a ton of credit for the way they stood tall in those scenarios. And then you get to the second half. I don't know what kind of speech Nick Saban gave the team at halftime, but it was probably along the lines of something I would have given how mad I was. I don't know about you, Alex, but I had to like change the location I was watching the game at. I had to go upstairs. I had to like just seclude myself and really just dial down into the game. So maybe that
I took a shower.
So every Bama fan was going through their superstitions. And then you come out in the second half, and Alabama gets the ball. Jace McClellan busts a 27-yard run, and then Jalen Milroe throws it 47 yards to Isaiah Bond for a touchdown. And that was probably the best sequence I've ever seen from this Bama offense this year. It was something special, especially the way that Isaiah Bond ran the route, just completely leaving his defender in the dust. But that really set the tone for the second half, and really Alabama from there was able to build on momentum and get stops on defense, kind of really get back into it. And then Josh Heupel, you got to look at him. You can't blame the rest, especially after the stupid decisions he made. He went two times on fourth down, one inside his own 30, I believe. And that was probably one of the stupid decisions I've seen. You talk about officiating, but you come out and call a terrible second half. You don't put your team in situations to win. I think it's pretty awful. If looking at it from a fan perspective, just what Josh Heupel did for Tennessee in this game is just awful. You'll get Tennessee's offense in the second half after having such a, I'd say almost dominant first half against Alabama. And we really haven't seen that other than like, I know you could say the Texas game, but Texas really didn't dominate Bama in the first half points wise. Tennessee did that at home. And I don't know. It's like the game plan for Tennessee went out the window. It's like they just sat down at halftime and passed around the orange slices and started giggling and cracking around in the locker room. And they come out in the second half and it's like, oh, there's 30 more minutes to play. And they just like forgot. And Joe Milton, he looked like a completely different quarterback. He looked like he was indecisive at times in the pocket. You go back to think about how Alabama dialed up pressure against him in the second half. I mean, I don't know what the stats were, but it felt like almost every other play, Alabama was able to get to him in the backfield and force him to make a split second decision, whether that be running out of the pocket or throwing the check down. But it just did not look like the same offense. This Tennessee team, their main thing was establishing the running game. You look at past weeks, especially what they did against Texas A&M. They come in this game and there's nothing. There's nothing. Got to give credit to Alabama's defensive line with the way they were able to stop it. They probably heard talks about that all week about how hard it would be to stop Tennessee's rushing game, and they matched the challenge. So Alabama in the second half made plays when they were supposed to, especially with forcing that fumble, strip fumble for a touchdown. Chris Braswell, of course, getting another pressure. Man, I think about like going back to Will Anderson and Dallas Turner being on the same team, and I thought that was probably the best pair of edge rushers I've ever seen. But Dallas Turner and Chris Braswell giving that duo a run for their money, because it's been insane. You gotta look at the defense as a whole, Deontay Lawson and Jahad Campbell really just being such good middle linebackers and patrolling the middle of the field. Jahad Campbell has taken advantage of all the playing time he's gotten. Now I will say there was a little bit of worry for me, especially when Tyrion Arnold went out with the concussion. He just didn't seem like he was playing right. And I think that I'll attribute that to the concussion. But for the most part, secondary did their job after that first series. And there was no problems other than that. So Alabama's defense, incredible. Alabama's offense second half looked stellar. Tennessee in the second half as a whole, just crap. I don't understand, man. 27 unanswered. That's the story right there.
Yeah, it felt like Josh Heupel got way too conservative with his play calling. He didn't do those comeback routes anymore, or at least they were being covered or something. And it didn't feel like he took the deep shots that he did last year with somebody like Jalen Hyatt. I know he's not there anymore, but they have speedy receivers. It's not like they don't have him on the roster. It just felt like he just kind of got conservative and tried to force this running attack, and it just wasn't working. And that was their downfall there. And the fact their defense couldn't stop Jalen Milroe on the offense.
Mm-hmm.
All right. If y'all watched the Arkansas-Mississippi State game and then, you know, you sat around there and said, you know what, let me turn on the Auburn-Ole Miss game. I'm pretty sure by the end of the Auburn Ole Miss game, you wanted to go somewhere and like cry in a corner or something, or gouge your eyes out, because those were probably the worst two games I've ever watched in succession in my entire life. Talking about Auburn, good Lord. I didn't think you could get worse on offense week after week, but it just continues to get worse and worse. I don't know how. Hugh Freeze coming in, everybody was like, he's a QB whisperer. He's this great offensive mind. He's very innovative with everything. And Auburn's offense has been worse than the defense has the entire season. And I was listening to a radio show on Jocks earlier this week when they were recapping this game. And they were talking about how at this point last season with Cadillac, Auburn's offense was better than it is at this point in the season. And it's not that Auburn has a better quarterback or had a better quarterback back then. Their quarterback was Robbie Ashford. I know they had Tank Bigsby, but you know, Tank Bigsby wasn't some all-American going to change the complexity of an offense. Auburn has running backs there. They have Jarquez Hunter, Jeremiah Cobb, Brian Battee, Damari Alston when he comes back from injury. The receivers are considerably better. The offensive line is about a million times better. So I'm not sure how Cadillac and the offensive coaching staff at that point last season did a better job than Hugh Freeze and Phil Montgomery are doing right now. I really don't know how. They gave Robbie Ashford the start. Awful. 22 passing yards, one interception, no touchdowns, 27 rushing yards. Peyton Thorne comes in, 9-13, 100 yards, one touchdown, an interception, 34 rushing yards. And I believe until like late in the third quarter, maybe early fourth, I believe it was probably early late fourth quarter when Auburn was down, they decided, hey, we got to actually start passing the ball now, or we're not going to be able to come back. And I think at that point, they had like six pass attempts. You cannot expect to win a football game in the SEC attempting six passes. You just can't. This isn't Army versus Navy. You're not going to be able to run the triple option, stuff like that. It just doesn't work. So this offense, awful. It's statistically, I believe, bottom two in the SEC, maybe the worst. So Hugh Freeze has got to figure something out here soon if he wants to get it to a bowl game this year, because the way they're playing, they won't beat Mississippi State. They won't beat Vanderbilt. I honestly think Vanderbilt might have a good chance to beat Auburn right now, the way Vanderbilt's offense looks. Arkansas, I don't know what's going on.
We'll get to that in a minute.
New Mexico State, maybe you get a win there. Maybe you do. I hope you do. It's been New Mexico State. Then Alabama, if you can't throw the football in Alabama, go ahead and pack it up, Auburn. Just pack it up. Don't even show up to the football game at that point if you can't throw the football. I think the Alabama-Auburn game every year, you throw everything out the book. Anything can happen. But if Auburn goes into Alabama, or Alabama comes to Auburn, sorry, and they came through the football and they're trying to run down Alabama's throat. We talked about Tennessee trying to run down Alabama's throat. It didn't work. I doubt it works with Auburn. So Auburn's got to figure out some passing attack. Like I said, if they wanted to go to a bowl game this year with Hugh Freeze, and I don't see it happening. You look at the defense for Auburn, did an amazing job, as best they could play. Held Ole Miss to 14 in that first half and only ended up giving up 28 points to an Ole Miss offense that I think is really, really good. So I think they stood their ground, did great. They had a few miscues here and there, but for the most part, they did their job on the football field. They can't do everything. They can't score the touchdowns for the offense. They can't go play defense, then come on offense, and let's put, Larry Nixon, a quarterback or something, expecting him to throw the football. I give a lot of credit for Ron Roberts for what he's done with his defense, because last year the defense, I think, was okay, but it wasn't as good as it is now, in my opinion. So hats off to that defense, but when your offense goes 4-for-14 on third down conversions, go ahead and pack it up. Ole Miss, disappointing. This is disappointing. You're number 13 in the country. Your only loss being to Alabama. You beat LSU, and you give up 21 points to Auburn, and you only manage to score 28. Jackson Dart played pretty good, 10 of 17, 202 yards, touchdown, and had two rushing touchdowns. Quinshon Judkins had 124 rushing yards and a touchdown in his return to Auburn. He played at Pike Road during high school, so this is a kind of a revenge game for him when Brian Harsin told him they didn't want to recruit him. The Ole Miss offense, even worse than Auburn on third down conversions, 2-for-11. Good Lord. This wasn't, even though it was 28-21, this was a hard game to watch if you're a guy who likes to watch offenses. It was just awful. Nathan, what are your thoughts on this game as a whole?
I try to keep everything in perspective because this is Hugh Freeze's first year at Auburn. And the situation he walked into was utter garbage. Brian Harsin completely ruined this program. Hugh Freeze has essentially had to rebuild it from the ground up. But at this point in your first year, you've gone through your bye week. You've gone through a good bit of your schedule already. And you still don't know what works on the offensive end. I mean, you had a whole bye week to figure this out. And after the bye week, you have weeks of practice. What do they do? What do they do at practice? Does anyone know? I'm about to just go down to Auburn myself and watch them practice to see what they actually do every week to understand why they can't get it done. Complete inept ability at the QB position. Two guys who just have zero clue how to play. I'm pretty sure that me or Alex would go down there and we make a better quarterback right now. Because I can't just blame the play calling either. That's a sorry thing. I know the play calling is not great, but for the simple fact that these two players cannot execute, it's a simple fact that this offense does not work. We saw the time Peyton Thorne was at Michigan State. He had so many issues. And for the people this offseason, Auburn fans mainly, I was in this group because Hugh Freeze has just developed a lot of good quarterbacks. I think back to Bill Wallace and the way he developed him.
Chad Kelly.
I mean, you can create a list, but I thought that Hugh Freeze was going to help develop Peyton Thorne and kind of push some of these negative things out of his system to where he'd be an all-around good quarterback. Dude's gotten worse. Dude's gotten so much worse. Robbie Ashford, his development, it's declining super fast because the dude can't throw the ball. Dude cannot throw the ball. Glorified running back. You want to talk about Lamar Jackson and Jalen Hurts being a running back? This dude makes him look like Tom Brady passing the ball. Awful. Running game? You got a great running game. You got good receivers. Your defense is incredible compared to last year, but you don't have a quarterback. You're awful. Awful. And Ole Miss making it a game versus them. Like, Ole Miss has so much potential on the offensive end. We've seen it. We watched the game versus LSU. They can get it done on the offensive end. And it's like they come out in this game and they just say, nah, we don't feel like it. We're going to let them hang around. I don't understand what the whole intent was. And I know LSU turned the ball. I mean, no, LSU almost turned the ball over, but Auburn did too. So it's not like it was just a buddy battle. It's just like these teams got to third down scenarios and said, go get the first down. What does that mean? I don't understand what that means. And it's just awful. Awful, awful, awful. Both these teams are awful. Ole Miss, you have so much to play for. You're still in the running to almost win the SEC West. You think about situations, you're still in the running. So to mess around with a team like Auburn, I know you got the win, but it doesn't instill confidence in a lot of people, especially your fans. And you still got a very big game versus Georgia coming up. So you don't get right for that. That's awful. But Auburn going forward, you look at the remaining schedule, Mississippi State, Vanderbilt, Arkansas, New Mexico State, and Alabama. They have three wins right now, correct, Alex?
Yes, it's three.
So you got to get three wins to make a bowl game. Then I guess you can consider that you were better than last year's team, even though I wouldn't say so, really. But I'll get it right now. They got Mississippi State at home this coming weekend. It's going to be a difficult game. Mississippi State hasn't been a good team all year, but I don't know. There's just something about Mississippi State versus Auburn. It's going to be a very defensive battle, so we'll see. They head to Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt's not a gimme game. Vanderbilt's been very good on the offensive end. They've improved, really, as a team. And I know Vanderbilt's not like this really enticing place to play. It's not like you're going to have 1,000 fans just screaming at you the entire time. It's pretty quiet. It's almost like a concert out there.
They got construction there. That's pretty loud.
Yeah, they got construction. but that's not a gimme game. Arkansas, the way they're playing, we'll see. I think that Arkansas is still a very talented team, and they have the tools and resources to beat a team like Auburn, but we'll see. New Mexico State, that should be a gimme game. That's a cupcake game, but I don't know at this point in the year. And then you got Alabama, the way you're playing right now, just go and forget about that one. So you got four teams right there, realistically, that you can beat. But it's going to come down to the execution of the players and the execution of the coaching staff to see if Auburn gets to the bowl or not. But honestly, first year for Hugh Freeze, it's been a wash.
Really has been. They've lost games they should have really won. They should have beat Georgia, in my opinion. They really should have. And they had it, and they forgot Brock Bowers was on the field. It just feels like Auburn gets to these points where they almost win these games, and it's like, oh crap, we're down. We had to pass the football now, and they crap their pants and they sell the game.
And they remember they're Auburn. They're not supposed to win the big games.
Ricardo Lewis catching the double pass or whatever.
Auburn magic's gone. You don't got any more magic. There's no more bailouts. So you got to actually execute, and they don't know what that is.
Yeah. You mentioned awful to reference that last game, Nathan. Well, awful doesn't even begin to describe what UAB's been this season. Good Lord. It's a wash. Trent Dilfer's first year is a wash. They host Memphis and lose 45-21 in the battle for the bones and fall to 2-6 in the season. Quarterback Jacob Zeno, who's basically been one of the best players in the country at the quarterback position stats-wise, he didn't play, so that was a big loss to backup quarterbacks Harrison Barker and Landry Liddy. Forget about it. Awful. It was hard to watch. I don't know what UAB's doing right now. At this point last year, the interim coach, God, his name slipped my mind, and I met him too, but he was doing better than this. I believe they made a bowl game last year. So it's like Auburn 2.0 at UAB right now, except we know how to throw the football. Jacksonville State does beat Western Kentucky 20-17, and Jacksonville State's now 6-2 and 4-1 in Conference USA. And they're eligible for a bowl game, but sad part is since they're new to the FBS, they can't play for a bowl game for a certain period of time. We've seen that with James Madison. I think it's a really stupid rule when you're going to let somebody like James Madison, who I believe is undefeated right now, not play in a bowl game. When, you know, we have teams like, they're going to be like 6-6 teams that are awful. You don't want to go watch them play, make a bowl game. I hate that. I hate that rule. I think at the most, it should be a year of like probation where you're getting kind of used to it. And then after that, if you're actually winning football games, then you should be allowed to play in a bowl game. It's not fair to the players. It's not fair to the coaches. It's not fair to the fans. If you're going for a team like James Madison and you're undefeated, last year they were doing pretty well. I believe they were ranked in the top 25 last year as well. Mm-hmm. So, and then they didn't make a bowl game. It's just disappointing. And I think it's got to be a rule change there. All right. Talking about number 7, Penn State taking on number 3, Ohio State. Nathan, you're talking about last week. We said, you said Penn State was your favorite out of the three of Ohio State, Penn State, and Michigan.
Yeah. And pack it up.
And I kind of mentioned that I was worried about Drew Allar. This is his first year starting at quarterback, hadn't really been tested in his entire career. And this is going to be his first big test. And on the flip side, Kyle McCord had played Notre Dame and won that game. So that was his big test. And good Lord, 20-12, Ohio State wins the football game. Drew Allar, 18-42, 191 yards and a garbage time touchdown. Didn't throw an interception, didn't fumble or anything like that. Had -23 rushing yards due to some sacks and stuff like that. Nick Singleton, the running back, 48 rushing yards. Catron Allen, 26 rushing yards. So when you have a quarterback like Drew Allar, who is really his first big start of his career against Ohio State, struggling to throw the football, not really getting help from his receivers, and you have two guys like Singleton and Allen in the backfield, you're like, okay, well, Drew Allar struggling. Let's try to run the football. Let's run it down Ohio State's throats. Let's get some pressure off this guy's. And Singleton and Allen, no help to him. This is not on Drew Allar entirely. You got to help the dude out. It's not like you're playing. It's not like Drew Allar's Bryce Young or someone like Caleb Williams, and you know you're expecting him to carry the offense majority of the game. He's not going to do that. You got to get him help. But the running backs, no help. Receivers, no help. The offensive line that was supposed to be this great offensive line. They have a top 15, top 10 pick in Olu Fashanu, who could have been a top 10 pick last year at the tackle position. And the offensive line didn't help him out. Didn't help out Drew Allar. Didn't help out the running game. Didn't get these guys running lanes. Penn State, the defense, I think, played pretty well holding Ohio State to 20 points, even though they let Marvin Harrison Jr. catch everything he wanted to. Maserati Marv, as Gus Johnson would say.
Don't start with that, Alex.
And Nathan, you said it last week. This was the year Penn State should win games. This is the year they should make the college football playoff, make the Big Ten championship, win that. And James Franklin just couldn't do it. James Franklin, it feels like every year, or almost every year, he gets these undefeated records, and then he has to play Ohio State and Michigan, and he absolutely just craps his pants. He doesn't know what's going on. He gets confused. And it doesn't work out. Ohio State, big win for them. They beat Notre Dame, even though that win, you know, now since Notre Dame did beat USC, even though that one's not looking great for them in the grand scheme of things. But Ohio State has that win against Notre Dame, and now they have a win against Penn State. So if they beat Michigan, they're pretty much in the college football playoff. Even though I hate Ohio State, I don't think they're a top four team in the country right now, but they're undefeated. They beat two big opponents, and they've done that with Marvin Harrison Jr. playing really well. He had 162 yards this game and a touchdown. Kyle McCord's been a good game manager. Didn't turn the ball over at all. 286 yards and a touchdown. Didn't have Trayvon Henderson this game, but Mayan Williams played pretty well in relief. 24 carries, 62 yards and a touchdown. The defense did pretty good job against Penn State's offense. Held Drew Allar in check, was able to stuff the run game, kind of force Penn State to try to throw the football, and it not work out. You look at Ohio State's record coming up. You got Wisconsin, who it was without their starting quarterback, Tanner Mordecai. You got Rutgers, who is 6-2 right now. I don't think Rutgers is going to give Ohio State trouble, in my opinion. Maybe they do. I don't think they will. Michigan State, wash. Michigan State's a dumpster fire right now. Minnesota should be an easy win. Minnesota's offense is awful. Their last big test, in my opinion, is Michigan. And like I said, if they beat Michigan, they should be in the college football playoff. Look at Penn State. They still got to play Michigan. Maybe they beat Michigan. Maybe Michigan beats Ohio State. And there's like this three-way tie between all of them with one loss in the Big Ten. And something happens there. But it's only one loss for Penn State. They still got a season ahead of them. We say this every time a team only loses their first game. You can't just throw the towel in. Keep fighting. Keep winning. If you win your games, you control your own destiny at this point. So just keep fighting if you're Penn State. Nathan, what were your thoughts on this game as a whole?
This game put me to sleep, basically. I expected so much more out of both of these two teams. I knew their defenses were going to play good. But the way that both these teams just completely struggled on offense, let me be clear. It wasn't just Penn State struggling on offense. Ohio State could not move the ball to save their ass. There were a few drives they put it together, especially the first one. But then they got into the red zone. And then they were like, oh, we can't score touchdowns. We got to kick field goals. So for a while, I believe this game was like, I don't know, it was like 9-6 or something like that. It was some stupid score. And I don't know. I just don't get with Penn State. What, they were like 1-16 on third downs?
Something like that. It was bad.
Execution. That's the word of the show, execution. Because this is another team that failed to execute. And it's not that they can't execute. It's just that they haven't executed yet. And this was a game that they needed to. James Franklin consistently cannot win these big games. And I don't know if it's like our fault because us as fans expect him to, or I wouldn't even say expect him to, but I think we expect him to get to the point where he wins one of these big games, and he just hasn't yet. And we continue to ask, when is that time going to come? If you're a Penn State fan, you really ask yourself, do you deserve more as a fan? Do you think Penn State should be winning more games as of right now? I think James Franklin does a terrific job as a head coach at Penn State, but when it comes down to playing Ohio State, when it comes down to playing Michigan, they just haven't been able to get the job done. And this is another scenario.
I got the stats for James Franklin, Nathan, for his stats.
I know they're awful.
1-9 versus Ohio State, 0-10 on the road versus top 10 teams, and 3-16 overall versus top 10 teams. So dude cannot get it done when he has to play a big time opponent. He just can't.
But you also got to remember, majority of those games, he wasn't favored. Penn State wasn't favored. And there's been reasons behind that. And the games that they have been favored, I believe they've won those. So Penn State is not to the level yet. James Franklin, he's had to try really hard to build Penn State up to be this program, to compete with Ohio State and to compete with Michigan in the Big Ten. They're not to that level yet. And I say yet because I believe James Franklin, if there's a coach in the country that can get it, Penn State to that level, I think James Franklin is going to be that coach. It's just, this is not the year. I say that because I still have Michigan State. I mean, Michigan still on the schedule. I don't think they're going to win that game. I don't think they had the offensive capabilities to even come close to keeping up with Michigan. You look at what Michigan's doing right now. I just don't think it's going to work out well. Penn State just another year, you have everything in front of you still, but Michigan coming up, you don't win that game. You're still going to make a good bowl, but it feels like a disappointment given the roster you've had. And it really sucks. I thought they were going to be at Ohio State. They had them there for a minute. They were really competing well. And then Kyle McCord gets in a rhythm, gets the ball to Marvin Harrison. Marvin Harrison being the playmaker for Ohio State just takes over the game.
Maserati Marv.
And you got to give Ohio State and Marvin Harrison credit for that, because I think this game without Marvin Harrison, I know Emeka Ebukam's missing from this game too, but without Marvin Harrison in there, I think this is a completely different game. Credit to Ohio State's defense. Incredible defense. Penn State's defense, they played really well too. I know Chop Robinson went out with an injury early. I think that really hurt their defense early on. But your offense did not do you any favors. 18 of 42 passing. Awful.
But like I said, you got to remember, this is really Drew Allar's first big test. And like you said, Nathan, it's another year for him. I think if he has another year under his belt starting, and he gets some weapons, because right now his receiving weapons.
I just really thought that the running game, it would help him out a little bit. And they couldn't establish it. So Ohio State, they I don't think they're one of the best teams in the country, but they're up there. They are a pretty elite team, in my opinion. But they still got a lot on offense to figure out.
Yeah. I think Ohio State is similar to Georgia in the fact where their offense is really reliant on that one player for the most part. Mm-hmm. Brock Bowers of Georgia, Ohio State.
I don't think Georgia's defense is near as talented as Ohio State's.
I think the difference between Georgia and Ohio State is Kirby Smart. That's the big difference. And the thing, if Ohio State had Kirby Smart, I think we'd be talking about Ohio State as like the Georgia type program over there, where their offense isn't great and their defense isn't great, but you know, they're still number one in the country. Yeah. So I think that's the difference there. I think outside of the head coach, very similar teams in that fact. Mm-hmm. And it might get a lot of hate from Georgia fans, but that's just the truth. All right. Talking about the last big game we're really going to go over here is number 14, Utah beating number 18, USC 34-32. USC now loses two games. And fun fact here, Lincoln Riley and Clay Helton, who he replaced as the head coach, are both 17-5 in their first 22 games. Disappointing. USC has quarterback Caleb Williams, Heisman winner last year, has all these weapons on offense, defense.
Didn't miss a pass.
I think they have some good players on defense. Talk about Bear Alexander at defensive tackle. They have some good pieces there. But when Alex Grinch is the defensive coordinator and he's just over there coloring in his coloring book half the time, and you know, he's like, oh yeah, Utah got their backup quarterback in. Let's let him outplay Caleb Williams. Ah, you know, that's fine. You can't expect to win football games. You give up 34 points to Utah, who pretty much all season, their offense has really not hit that 30-point mark, I don't believe. I don't think they've maybe hit it at all. And
Is this the first time hitting it? Maybe this is like the second time.
Maybe not.
They haven't scored that much, though.
Yeah. Like I mentioned with Utah, QB Bryson Barnes, 14-23, 234 yards, 3 touchdowns, an interception, added 57 rushing yards on the ground and a touchdown. He had a big rush on that final drive that kind of set him up in field goal range. He also got roughed when he was throwing the football. I believe they called targeting on Bear Alexander. Bear Alexander didn't really agree with the call, crying on the sideline afterwards, as most people probably would in that type of position where you get thrown out of a game on the final drive where you're like, I can make a difference here. And I honestly think Bear Alexander probably could have, considering how bad the back end of that defense for USC had been all game. Jaquindon Jackson, the running back, 117 rushing yards. Then Sione Vaki. I was looking at him on ESPN's website, kind of did research on this guy. He's listed as a safety. I'm not sure if that's a glitch in ESPN's system or he just switched over this game to a gadget player or what, but Vaki had 149 receiving yards, 2 touchdowns, and added 68 rushing yards. He was doing pretty good. He was torching that USC defense. You look at the defense for Utah, been terrific all year, probably one of the best in the country, top 10 in my opinion. Kyle Whittingham's really got that defense playing great football. They've been really a great defense ever since Kyle Whittingham got hired there. They had 3 sacks, 4 TFLs, had a fumble recovered by Cole Bishop. They had Caleb Williams where he running for his life, got all the pressure on him. You look at USC, another game, Caleb Williams just does not do what he's supposed to do. 256 passing yards, no touchdowns, no interceptions, added 27 rushing yards and a rushing touchdown. But, you know, you look at Caleb Williams as the Heisman quarterback, and he's in this type of game against Utah. You expect Caleb Williams to have 300 passing yards, 2-3 touchdowns, add 50 rushing yards on the ground, something like that, carry the offensive load, and he just didn't do that. And it's another game where he had to do that, and he just didn't do it. He got bailed out in the Arizona game when he kind of disappeared. This game, he didn't. The defense, like I mentioned with USC, just forget about it. They did score a touchdown for pick six by Kalen Bullock, but really outside of that, I mean, pack it up. Nathan, USC is now squarely out of the playoff picture. I mean, we can agree on that. They have two losses.
The threshold is two losses pretty much. And I will say that unless like a team wins their conference, then maybe you'd have an argument, but two losses, you're pretty much done.
Nathan, I talked about it when I first started talking about this game. Lincoln Riley, Clay Helton having the same record for the first 22 games, kind of comparable to what Jimbo Fisher and Kevin Sumlin have at Texas A&M, where there's similar records there. And there's like Texas A&M's like holding on to Jimbo Fisher for dear life these past couple of seasons. And USC's kind of hanging on with Lincoln Riley right now. Do you feel like Lincoln Riley's like halfway out the door to an NFL job, like most people are saying he is? Is Lincoln Riley kind of like a Cliff Kingsbury from the fact that they're really innovative offensive minds, but they can't win these big football games? They just like, they get this kind of bailout mentality where they're, oh my God, they're these innovative offensive minds. Let's give them a break. Is he kind of like an upgraded Cliff Kingsbury that's better at recruiting? Is that really what Lincoln Riley is?
It's hard to say right now, given the fact that Lincoln Riley continues to disappoint in big moments. And honestly, I can't blame 100% of it on him because, well, I guess in a way you could, because a good 50% should go to his defensive coordinator, Alex Grinch. And and it's on Lincoln Riley because Lincoln Riley has not made the executive decision to move on from him. But forgive me if I'm wrong, but I believe Alex Grinch was with Lincoln Riley when he was at Oklahoma, correct? Or am I? I might be wrong.
I think he was at Missouri for a time there. I can't remember, but he shouldn't be defense coordinator, tell you that.
No, he shouldn't be. And for the simple fact that Utah has had USC's number pretty much every single year now, did they do any like practice or scout team, or do they say, hey, let's watch some film on Utah and what they do? Because it's not like Utah just drastically changed up their game plan. No. I mean, they pretty much stuck to what they know and made sure that their backup quarterback was in a comfortable position. Defense, I'm so done with USC. Wasting a quarterback like Caleb Williams. It's unfair to him to expect him to do everything for the team. It's awful. And they have so much talent across the board, but the defense cannot figure it out. And that starts with Alex Grinch, and that starts with Lincoln Riley not being able to pull the trigger and go ahead and get a new defensive coordinator. Because if he had a new defensive coordinator that just did a little bit more work, this result's different. And there's a bunch of different games that will probably be different results. And maybe Caleb Williams wins the national championship, but I don't know. So, what a waste of talent. Waste of one of the best quarterbacks we've seen in a few decades. Awful.
But kudos to Utah, man. I mean, they've played with their backup quarterbacks all season. Barnes, then I believe the other guy's Johnson is his last name. Nate Johnson.
Yeah.
I mean, kudos to them for being ranked this highly, not losing to teams like USC, having to play backup quarterbacks. And they'll continue to have to play them because Cameron Rising's not going to play this season, as it was announced by Kyle Whittingham after this game. So, I mean, if Utah can continue to win football games and then win the Pac-12, they somehow do that because they have Oregon coming up. They play Washington. They play Colorado in the year. I mean, if they win those games and they've been in the Pac-12, could we be talking about Utah in the college football playoff at this point, Nathan? Because the Pac-12 has been pretty good all year. I mean, talk about Oregon and Washington by themselves.
It's difficult to say because just like getting a team and plugging them into a different scenario, you just never know what's going to happen. Circumstances are different across the country. And I think that Utah competes well on the Pac-12 because they are so familiar with the other teams around them and the teams they have to play. And even with playing with the backup quarterback, I think they can kind of get away with more stuff than usual because the defenses are a little bit more lax.
All right, let's talk about the one episode that happened this week.
Go ahead and say it. Go ahead and say it so we can move on.
Virginia beats UNC 31-27. Tony Musket for Virginia. 208 passing yards, a touchdown passing interception, then 66 rushing yards. Virginia had 228 rushing yards as a whole, three rushing touchdowns. Drake May threw the interception on a final drive with 26 seconds left that really iced the game and let Virginia win it. And for Virginia, they had lost their first 30 road games against top 10 opponents until now when they beat UNC. That's it. I have nothing else to say. You lose to Tony Musket. You lose to a guy with the last name Musket. That's all I got to say for you, UNC. Every year, I expect something, especially with Drake May at quarterback, and I just continue to get disappointed, depressed. Mac Brown, what in the world? Other storylines. Number 4, Florida State scored 21 unanswered points to beat Duke's. Number 16, Duke, 30-28 after Blue Devils quarterback Riley Leonard left the game in the third quarter with an ankle injury. So Florida State, once again, escapes a scare there.
Bailed out.
Talking about escaping a scare, number 8, Texas avoids the upset from Houston with a 31-24 win. Notably, Quinn Ewers will miss 3 to 4 weeks with a grade 2 AC sprain, a joint sprain in his right shoulder. Malik Murphy, the backup, will get the duties there till he comes back. No Arch Manning. So if you're a Texas fan, don't expect that unless Malik Murphy disappoints you in the next week or something. Number 22, Air Force remains unbeaten with a 17-6 win over Navy. As of right now, Air Force will be in the New York Six Bowl. So there you go, Air Force. Another team that escapes an upset bid is number 6, Oklahoma. They beat UCF after the Knights failed to convert on a 2-point conversion. I don't know what Gus Malzahn was doing. That was the worst 2-point conversion play call I've seen. And I saw the Arizona one a couple weeks ago against USC. I don't know what we're trying to run double pass, making things complicated. Just run what you're supposed to run. Don't get too fancy. And that was really important if Oklahoma would have lost that game for a team like Alabama. That really would have been. And some other teams that have one loss, like Utah. Number 24, Iowa. Yeah, Oregon as well. Number 24, Iowa fell to Minnesota 12-10. Evan Cooper DeJean's 54-yard punt return was called back after Urs Willie made a fair catch signal before fielding the punt. Iowa, Lord have mercy. You managed to score 10 points in the game. Brian Ferentz, go ahead and start packing your bags. You will not be the offensive coordinator next year. Even though your team only has 2 losses now, just start figuring stuff out where you're going to get the moving trucks from. According to head coach Dabo Swinney, Clemson's sports psychiatrist is on suicide watch. After Clemson lost to Miami and their backup quarterback, Emory Williams, in double overtime, 28-20, Clemson falls to 4-3 on the season. And after the game, Dabo Swinney kind of blamed Cade Klubnik because he did say that was supposed to be a run play, but Cade Klubnik pulled the ball and tried to do something too much on his own. And Klubnik did agree with Dabo Swinney there, said he did make that play call on his own end, and it ended up costing them that game. And I don't know if Dabo Swinney was trying to be funny about his sports psychiatrist being on suicide watch. And, you know, for some people that might be funny, but in this current climate in the country right now, you can't be joking about that. You really can't be saying somebody's on suicide watch. Especially, like I said, in this country, say right now. And the last thing, in an absolute barn burner, Nathan, Mississippi State beat Arkansas 7-3. Go ahead and tell everybody how you used to describe this game as we get at it.
It was like watching someone get bludgeoned to death with a dull spoon, because this game, offense, there was none. No offense whatsoever. The defenses were just like out there just running into each other and just running into the offense and doing whatever. It's not like anyone really cared to play the game, at least from my perspective. the last drive for KJ Jefferson, it's like he just completely regressed, forgot how to throw the football. Dude was just launching the thing deep and expecting someone to grow 10 feet and get another 16-inch wingspan and reach out and catch the ball that it was overthrown 20 yards down the damn field. Awful QB play. But it starts with the offensive coordinator. Danny knows he's already packed his bags. He's gone. So Arkansas fans finally can take a deep breath and rejoice. It's awful. Awful. This game was the worst one of the day. The worst one of the day. And there's no other game that even comes remotely close to it. Congrats on Mississippi State getting the win. They needed that. I mean, Mike Wright, 8 of 12, 85 passing yards and a touchdown. And I know he had 11 carries for 60 yards, but oh my gosh.
Let's go ahead and Nathan, before you lose your mind even more than you already have right now.
Jefferson, 19 of 31, 97 passing yards. Oh my gosh.
Well, all right, everybody. That's all the time we have for today. Thank you for listening and watching to Students of the Game.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.